thank you so much, Michelle, for giving us some of your time while you're here to talk about your music, the latest release, Awakening, and how you got to here. It would be easy to dwell on Nicole Train music heritage because it's expansive and profound, but it's important here to focus on Michelle Coltrane for some important reasons. Your current disc, released last year, is sometimes referred to as your second release. One must go back to 1996 to a disc entitled I Think of You by Mickey Coltrane to follow your musical journey. In general, what are the musical differences? Yeah, so there's a 22-year expanse of time between I Think of You and Awakening. Things clearly, I'm assuming, have changed for you. You're a different portion of your life, and you're perhaps even a different artist right now. I was just wondering if you had a comment on what happened then with respect to creating an album as opposed to now.
Okay, well, during that time, even before that time, I had started to kind of plant my feet in doing background music, trying to be a writer. I'd lived in Japan for a couple of years, and so I had got a lot of work doing a background singing. And so I really didn't have a repertoire, so to say, that was really mine. And I had to do a lot of work to be able to continue as a leader in a group because I had to find a sound to present. So when I got back to L.A., I ran into a gentleman named Scott Hiltzik and Michael Cormier. And they said, hey, we want to feature some of our songs, which we'd like to use a few different singers. And that's how the album, I Think of You, came about.
Uh-huh.
So really was kind of a joint thing, but more so leaning towards the other two, right, the other writers.
Right.
I'm happy because my mother got to play on the track Lazy Bird, which I love too, and Robbie's actually on there as well. So time, I got married, and I had children, and I worked for Jellicle Music, which is John William Coltrane Publishing. That still exists today. I don't look at that time with regret, because I just enjoyed living next door. I was the neighbor to my mother, Alice. And so we got to have a lot of great family time. She passed away about 11, 12 years ago, and my kids were much bigger. And I decided, I started losing all of the priorities and the responsibilities that I had to take care of on a regular basis and started focusing on what I could do if I lived another 30 years of my life. So I went back to the things that I loved or had an affinity for. One of them was yoga. So I took a yoga training class to kind of get my mind together and mind and soul. And, and I looked out the window one day and I said, okay, wake up. Oh, boy, so wake up. Let's go. What are we doing? And I had known some folks in L.A. There was a jam session every Wednesday at this guy, Michael Dubin's house. And we would go there and just people would just kind of congregate and play music. So this gentleman named Shay Welsh used to show up with his guitar. And one night he said, you should come down to this club where I'm working at Tips on a particular night. The girl couldn't make it for the second set. Uh-huh. So I filled in on the second set. pretty well received, and the next thing you know, we lit the fire again. So we worked on a repertoire for a couple of years. We started working around the LA area, trying to find like what the direction would be, and I still can't say 100% if I have a sound that I want. Yes, I can say I'm still working on it. You know, I have my taste vary, and because we're working in places where there, like take LA for instance, there's a lot of music there and there's a lot of choices.
Sure.
And a lot of the clubs, the straight ahead clubs, if you will, and, you know, they're fewer. So we'll make a gig at a winery or whatever. And what we've done is blended our originals in with songs that people know.
Sure.
They're familiar with.
Yeah.
To not lose the audience, you know.
Right.
You know, classical music has been in trouble and jazz has been in trouble. And it's someone has to address this in some kind of way to say, what is it that the audience why are they leaving now? I went to a performance in France. I was there last month, and we saw Rebel and a symphony, and they had an area on the floor that was just open for, like, women with kind of toddlers. Some people are laying on their backpacks. And so, you know, it was, if that works, fine. If you're taking a nap.
Whatever it takes.
I wanted to go down there because we were looking at them from the balcony. So
sure.
Just trying to explain to you how our approach to getting to Awakening was to pick also songs, some songs that were relative to me and the producer in our lifetime.
Right.
So like Tin Man, that's written by the group America.
Right.
And
the piece by Foreigner.
I Want to Know What Love Is.
Yeah.
You know, these are things that were around when I was alive. There are a lot of songs that we do in our jazz standards, like Lover Man, that were written in the 20s.
Sure.
For this sake. You know, and I love that song.
Oh, it's a wonderful song.
Yeah. I just wanted to see how that would work.
Sure.
I mean, it's not the first time Diane Reeves did these years. People have been doing some contemporary, you know.
Yeah, as a side comment to that, and I was thinking about this on the way in. I was listening to your latest disc and heard Love and Spring again, and had read the comment that you'd made on it, and right on the money, Shirley Horn would have crushed that. It's absolutely crushed. That's a beautiful song.
For sure.
It's a beautiful lyrics. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, and going back, it was Fleetwood Mac these years that Diane Reeves covered.
Oh, okay.
And I did a lot of research to hear what all the other singers with Diane Krall, you know.
Sure.
Diana Krall, and you know, so I figure you're allowed to make something your own, you know. That's
absolutely you are. It's called artistic license. You were also part, in doing some research and back research, and you were also part of a group called Random Access. Perhaps perhaps before the 1996 release of I Think of You.
That's right.
And comments on that music and the group and creativity. I recall you making reference to Gil Scott-Heron when referring to a hip-hop aspect of that particular disc.
Yeah, it was another... Rick Zunigar is a great guitar player, and I think it was his younger brother that he was rapping, and there were a couple girls singing, and at the time it was a nice genre blending, you know, before that was really, you know, it was on the rise, and
sure.
I thought that it had a great sound, and you know, a lot of, when you can just get enough of the new and the old, you got a great thing going, you know, with recipes, or, you know, look at how food has really gotten very fast. So I'm trying to find another word besides eclectic, but it's they've melded things together.
Fusion.
That
Fusion.
Fusion.
There you go.
You know, and it serves us well. And you know, there's a type of fusion that people call, you know, the kind of music, John Scofield and whatever. But on whatever level it is, when you take your personality or you have a message that you want to deliver, as Carmen Lundy said, whisper. Whisper, they'll listen. I'm here to tell you.
Okay. I like that.
Whisper, they'll listen. Yeah, you know?
Sure. And Shirley Horn did that. Shirley Horn whispered from Tennessee.
Did it real well.
Yeah.
Not one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of just had to start where I started. I was lucky enough to work with someone that was had a rapport with, who had a job. Streets had a job, like the producer worked at USC, but he taught students, so he had time, because you need time to brainstorm, you know, and woodshed.
Yeah.
And we finally got this put together, and then we were short a few songs. So I talked to a guy named Jerry Gibbs, who Terry Gibbs' son.
Mm-hmm.
Terry Gibbs played vibes with my mom when they were kids. And he's in New York, so he goes, oh, I get a little band together for you. And we really were trying to stay away from My Favorite Things because of the amount of time that it's been done.
Sure.
And people just love it.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of times the band just goes nuts, and I can't stop them. I have to let them, like, do it.
Gotta let it do their thing, man. They're going to get wound up.
Yeah, you're right. You know, you ask some Ferrari to come and just, you know, go at 10 miles an hour on the parking lot. It's not, So sometimes we'll hire these young guys, and they're out for the kill. So
sure.
They got to remember there's a singer there, and I have to come back in.
That's right.
Wait.
It's like, hey, who's running this show anyway?
Yeah, right. But I loved it too. I would start step back.
Yeah, how
and
could
be,
you not?
You know,
yeah.
Now I'm listening. So those got a few little comments about that.
Yeah.
But it's like, you just want to, just singing and another song and another song. We're just trying to find the right blend of solos and singing and, you know, maybe one solo is per song, or, you know, just maybe play the two A's and I'll come back in on the bridge, because sometimes we're being very generous about it. It just depends on where the club was, especially if it was, I hate to say it, but when the ones that, if the establishment didn't care, we really play what we wanted to play. And we could practice, we could work on our stuff.
Which is a huge freedom. That's a huge freedom.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Just as an aside on the comments on Gil Scott-Heron, I couldn't let this go by. Did you know that he wrote and performed a song entitled Lady Day and John Coltrane?
I think I do.
Okay. Because it's just a cool song. Anyway, so you were talking about Shay, and it way led into this next question, so we probably don't have to spend a lot of time on it, but I'm not going to bypass it. You mentioned in one of your interviews that you were advised by the late Jerry Allen to find a guitarist that syncs with you, and Shay Walsh certainly delivers the goods, not only accompanying you, but producing the album as well. Can you comment on that partnership of musical skills that the two of you share?
Okay. Yes, that's true from Jerry's lips to my ears. Just to also remind me that pop pianos are not in tune, or somebody don't care for them, or they're not there. A certain level of player doesn't have or age or time to move a piano into a room and, you know, to do these gigs. So she said, why don't you look for a guitar player? They're a lot more mobile.
and
they come with an amp and everything.
Yeah.
There you go. And we have done a lot of duet stuff before.
If
the bar or place, that's all they wanted and all they could afford.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we're lucky if we get a bass player. It is, you know, it adds to the layers of sound. So people, if they were listening, it's not so boring. And Shay, due to his years and years of teaching students, you know, all the way from the stars and LA's kids to high school kids coming into USC, he's got a lot of patience.
You have to.
I kind of came with you know, stunted musical academics. You know, I played the violin for a while. I had the piano lessons. I had a little guitar lessons. I had some vocal lessons, you know. So I needed somebody to make me feel comfortable where it wasn't about them showing, tooting their horn about how smart they are, but helping me, encouraging me to develop things that, you know, the writing, and to trust myself and just kind of say, I'm back here supporting you. Go on, you know, go on. It's what we're going to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I always
As a grown up, I needed that because, you know, you could go home one night and, you know, and it doesn't work every time. As my brother Robbie said, you play with people you never met and you go home elated. Uh-huh. Or you go home with people you've been on the road with for a month and you're like, oh.
Didn't work out tonight, huh? Yeah. No, I can imagine there is that whole array of feelings that can happen. And sometimes you just don't know how it's going to go.
That's kind of the fun of it.
Yeah.
And that it's living with the red light on, the danger or the risk, I wouldn't say.
Yeah, being on the edge.
The risk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I find it incredibly satisfying to watch the facial gestures and body gestures that indicate a conversation is going on between performers on stage during a song. And I think that's huge. That's just it just really speaks to relationships and the quality of the music and the respect that artists have for one another when they're performing.
Absolutely. And I did a big band gig here at in Racine at the zoo.
Yes.
And I loved it. There were a lot of kids there.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of girls in the band. So it was really fun.
That's
great.
And
some veterans. And I was so impressed. They were so, you know, we just brought a lot of new charts in and they just killed it. And I thought, wow, this big band stuff is fun. It almost just, it does it itself. You know, like I'm singing, but I'm trying to find my place in within all of this.
The bigger picture, yeah.
The bigger picture, but you can't communicate the way you can with a quartet or a trio. It's like,
right.
I'm just waiting for the conductor to say, before bars, you're in right here.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, it's just another feeling. You know, I listened back. I put my voice notes on and recorded some of it. But the song arrangement, it's in control. It seems to be what's running it, you know?
Sure.
And,
sure.
Like, how much do I put myself? I want to stay within the lines because there's something written there that, you know, there's a break. And I say, moment, no, and there's no music. So I kind of have to be true to them. The part where I'm usually as a jazz vocalist all over something, or I just changed the whole course of what I was going to do.
Yeah.
And so it was a good discipline. It's a good discipline for me, and I would love to do it as much as possible.
Sure. This is a non-music question here. This just occurred to me when I was doing some research on you. You essentially delayed a more active career in music for the most traditional reasons, marrying and raising a family. You're married to you're married to a Cuban musician, have two children who I assume are grown adults at this point.
Uh-huh.
A conventional search on the internet, such as Michelle Coltrane Wiki, brings up no information on you. How do you even manage that? That just blew me away.
About my husband?
No, I mean, there's nothing there. If you type in on Google, Michelle Coltrane Wiki, and I can do that for virtually any blues or jazz artist, and boom, there's a biography, there's a bunch of websites. There's nothing there. There's just nothing.
Oh, that's weird. I got to take care of that. Maybe I'm piggybacked on, I don't know.
There's a lot of references to Coltrane, but
right.
Very few about you, and nothing there that gives a biography or profile.
Nobody went in and did it. Who does these wiki things?
I just figured people sat down and figured this stuff out and entered it. But
I did
it's
too.
Not there.
Let me make a note of that. Okay.
Your voice is powerful and evocative, which you prove with Awakening. Whenever I hear a voice, and particularly when I hear a female voice with that presence, I wonder what they would sound like performing the blues or gospel. Do either of those genres interest you?
I'm completely in awe and inspired, mostly by gospel singers.
Okay.
And my mother used to sit and watch a lot. And another one of my list of to-dos is to join a Baptist choir. I just have to be able to make the rehearsals.
Yeah.
I'd just really love to be in that.
That would be really cool. That would be really cool. When you lived in Japan and you were employed as a DJ, what was it like to produce a show back then? What sort of music did you play? Did you have to become fluent in Japanese? What kind of music did your listeners desire, and were you required to play certain playlists, or was it freeform?
It was slightly free, but they had a large catalog of music. It was all vinyl. So in between songs, and because it was relevant in my lifetime, you know what I'm saying? So now I'm pulling out stuff where I've been alive all the time, this music with you. So it was a lot of fun for me to pull out records I hadn't seen, and I could be reading the liner notes while the record was playing. It was called Eddie's R&B Joint, so it was R&B music.
Uh-huh.
You know, so that was still fresh in my mind from, you know, going to disco and clubs and the radio. And,
sure.
People would kind of sit around a bar. I'm like behind a bar. So instead of the bartender, he was in another place, but they would just be right on the other side, mm-hmm. almost mm-hmm. looking at me. Mm-hmm. Or they would put requests on paper or whatever. But I just picked what I liked. They didn't give me a playlist unless somebody gave me a request. And I would really try to go, because those are the days we listened to the whole record, you know?
Yeah.
We put it on, we had our whole stereo.
Yep.
So I knew some of the other cuts in there that I would try to pull out.
Sure.
And people just seemed to be, it was so well received.
Yeah. I hear that a lot about Europe and Japan in terms of blues and jazz artistry, and how much more seemingly popular it is there and how much more respected it is than perhaps some scenarios here. But that's been going on for a long, long time. Given your resources and talents, where would you like to go in jazz or music in general? You kind of alluded to that. Are you working on another album? In parentheses, if you're allowed to say, where would you imagine you'll be several years down the road?
Never really ponder on these kind of things, but I would like to get a Grammy nod for... I could probably get Best New Vocalist. Jazz vocals, of course.
Yeah.
And I'd like to do a couple more records. You know, some like more total, like a modern... I just want to take an approach to doing some really what I want to do, which is hard to say because I think I know what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I also would like to do another record that is like in tribute not only to people that were famous, but to people that I love that are here. Like I wrote a beautiful song for my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I have a song for my son.
Yeah.
I have a few friends.
Baby Blue.
I just thought that might be cute.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, baby blues for Nick.
Yeah.
But see, now I put a little bit there. Now I either have to put those into the other album, you know?
Uh-huh.
And then, like, the song Out of the Shadow, that was for Alice, and that's
right.
A little experimental.
Yeah.
So now I want to take another shot, but have a theme all the way through, because I had to just kind of get this album going at the time. And those were the best songs at the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. In an in-depth and informative interview earlier this year with Joe Dimino, he finished off questions with a reference to a Back to the Future scenario, asking your thoughts on being able to time travel to any musical mm-hmm. era and who you'd choose to see. He prefaced that remark by saying, in his 500 interviews, every artist musician said they wanted to see your father perform, as did you. The framework of the question had occurred to me before I heard his interview with you, and the context is certainly nothing unique to the interview process, no matter the subject or the interviewee. So I'll rephrase the question slightly. Besides your father, would there be another musician, a runner-up, as it were, that you would like to see performing in some past era?
You should have said mother, too, because I would have loved to see Alice Coltrane playing bebop. You know,
okay.
Just
all right.
Heard her in pit. You're going to erase that one, too?
No, I'm good with that. I'm good with that. Besides your father, I wasn't trying to be exclusionary here. It would have been any artist, any era, any gender. It doesn't matter. But you're saying, want to go back and see mom doing bebop back in the day, huh?
Before I was born, yeah.
Yeah. No, I get it. Yeah. Okay. That's a good answer. There are occasional laments from music critics, and we kind of talked about this before. We just touched on it. From music critics, artists, and enthusiasts, that jazz and blues, for that matter, is dying out. No young emerging practitioners are stepping forward to fill the shoes of the veterans in the music buying. And then I thought about online piracy, or just utilizing public isn't particularly interested in this type of music. Or these types of music, despite significant evidence to the contrary and the fact that jazz and blues has never represented a segment of music marketability that could compete with pop, particularly with current algorithmic studio output using safe, time-tested, hooky riffs. Sorry for being on a soapbox here. I'm guessing you probably see things quite differently. Talk about the present and the future of jazz. What is happening from your perspective with emerging styles, trends, and technology that reassures you regularly jazz is safe from drifting into obscurity?
Well, I would have to say that in my lifetime, I saw my mother. I'm a widow at 29 years old, very competent musician in her own right, trying to curate or cater to the legacy of her husband who died at 40 years old. Now, I know sometimes when people die, they become, you know, there's not going to be any more, but in this particular case, I'm still always surprised, you know, at how mystical in some way is always that John Coltrane is always somewhere. It's always referenced. It's always noted. It doesn't go away.
Oh, no. No, nor will it ever.
The recent 10 albums to stream now, John Coltrane, Drake, Florence and the Machine and More. This is on the cover of Rolling Stone, and it's like, that's current.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who's happier, if it's Drake or Florence and the Machine, or is it you know, our family. But this lost and found record that's coming out, which I got to hear a little bit of, is a wonderful recording. I know there's Trainiacs out there.
Of course.
That's what I call them.
Yeah.
That could salivate for something like that. But,
sure.
You know, maybe some young listeners will, you know, I didn't learn about Bach or Beethoven or Mozart either, but when I heard it, I dug it, you know. It was like,
right.
You didn't have to be there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But this this album, Both Directions at Once, is, I think it just speaks to that mystical, you know, thing that's just always about Coltrane. And so he carries a big part of it. You know, there's others in there too. You know, I don't want to leave it. Miles is in the, I think he's still mainstream out there. If a kid doesn't, they may not know the song, but they know the name. That helps them. Sometimes they know that in the, now with the social media, it's helped them find something that's suitable for them to hear, where they don't jump to an Ascension record for John Coltrane. You know, it's like they never heard it before. They maybe get the ballads or something. I went to this music conference in France. It's called MIDM, and there were different speakers. And this gentleman brought up, he's a real techie guy, and he was talking about Alexa. And he had said that it was kind of neat. He was showing it. You could put in the words. It had a little trouble with melody, you know, like for instrument. And I even said, what about classical? What if I put in, you know, start humming something from Scheherazade? Is it going to, if I don't know the Scheherazade and I hum it?
Yeah.
And so he had a lot of little funny questions. But at the end of the day, having that in your house when you're getting in the shower or you're cooking and you don't have to fumble around with something, I think that's a good thing. I will give it some points for that, because you don't want to stop and dig through. You know, the kids have their stuff right at hand. But,
right.
You know, us older people, maybe I just want to wake up and, hey, play that Jimi Hendrix song that was on that record, you know.
Or hey Alexa, I want to hear A Love Supreme, right? I mean,
yeah. Every time I go into the Apple Store, that's what I do. I whisper to it because they have some hip hop.
I love it. I love it.
And I just see how long it stays on before the kids come over.
Yeah, make it go away. Yeah. Among your contemporaries, who do you enjoy and see as exemplifying a healthy jazz culture, both here and worldwide?
Better alive?
Yeah.
Better alive? I'm a big Diane Reeves fan.
Okay.
Super duper. Super. Yeah. I think what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like Gregory Porter's Nat King Cole album. I thought that was smart.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I would consider if I found the right, you know, if it was, organic is the word I'm looking for.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
He covers, and I'm thinking of the disc that he released that was, you know, honoring or paying tribute to Nat King Cole. I don't think he covered anything from the early era of Nat, from, say, the late 40s to the early 50s, when Nat King Cole was a little bit more of an R&B guy back then and didn't mind singing the blues. And, that's kind of the cool thing about that. I agree. I like both those artists a lot.
And that helps people too. That maybe, you know, hopefully you want to go, even if I heard a lot of those songs, Kisaz and you know, I heard it on the plane. So I can't remember all the songs, but I don't think there's anything. He's a good guy for that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I love Brandi Younger. I'm real big on her, the harpist.
Mm-hmm.
She's really into Alice Coltrane's music, and she's young. She plays with Solange Knowles a lot. And, you know, I'm just proud of these youngins, you know, that are taking a chance or spent their money to go to get a formal education.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
In music. And it's very brave.
And then hit the ground running as well, and honor the past in their own way. I think that's really important.
Their own sweet way.
Yeah,
that's what I love in you each day. That's what I feel in what we play.
Yeah,
Rubek.
Michelle. Yeah, I know. Thank you once again for sharing your time with us, your enthusiasm, your depth of knowledge with our listeners. It has been my extreme pleasure.